Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you may know my next guest, LeVar Burton, from Star Trek, from Roots, and especially for kids growing up from the 80s until the mid-2000s, from the PBS program Reading Rainbow. While Reading Rainbow officially went off the air in 2006, the host and executive producer of the show, LeVar Burton, has kept himself busy ever since, promoting the importance of literacy for children with an iPad, radio, Rainbow Reading app, and more. But Burton recently changed gears a little bit and has turned towards storytelling for adults. Last month, he came out with his own podcast, LeVar Burton Reads. And this time, the podcast hopes to grab the attention of the Reading Rainbow generation, who are now all grown up. It's an honor. Welcome to WNYC.
It is my honor, Mr. Lehrer.
And listeners, did you grow up watching Reading Rainbow? Did it contribute to your love for reading? Do you have any other questions for LeVar Burton? Maybe about his other characters who you may have equally loved from Star Trek The Next Generation or Roots or anything else he's done. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Is the podcast Reading Rainbow for the millennials who grew up watching it?
It's not intended to be a direct translation of Reading Rainbow. The commonalities are it is storytelling. It's simply just me reading short stories, Brian. That's the deal. But people are calling it Reading Rainbow for adults, and I can't stop them from that.
Here's a clip from your first episode. You are reading an excerpt from the science fiction story by Bruce McAllister, Kin.
Who is it that you wish to have killed? The voice asked, and the boy almost looked up. It was only a voice, mechanical, snake-like, halting, he reminded himself. By itself, it could not kill him. A man named James Ortega Mambe, the boy answered. Why?
So this is not just books on tape. You've got production values.
There's a bit, yeah, just to create sort of an immersive experience for the listener.
Was that you doing the alien voice as well?
Indeed, sir.
Did your role as Captain Jean-Luc, Geordi LaFarge, in Star Trek The Next Generation, contribute to the science fiction you read and love? Because I gather with that clip as an example that that's one of your favorite genres.
Well, it is. Science fiction is my go-to genre when I'm reading purely for pleasure. Star Trek was a really fundamental force in my childhood, in my youth. My mother and my sister and I used to gather to watch the original series every opportunity we had. Because as a science fiction fan, it was rare for me to encounter heroes in the pages of those novels that I read who looked like me. Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future was one that included me. It embraced me, and so I embraced it.
Here's another clip for the fun of it. Another 25 seconds as you get ready to tell the short story Empty Place by Richard Parks.
We're going to follow these two men on their journey through a kingdom, taking what ends up to be a pretty unusual route. I hope you'll enjoy. So, if you're ready, take a deep breath. Yeah, that was nice. Okay, here we go. Let's begin.
Demonstrating once again, when we say take a deep breath, it's really the exhale that
it
matters.
Is. Yes, it is. It absolutely is. And the breath is important to me because it really serves as a boundary between our everyday mundane world and the magical world of storytelling. And putting yourself in a receptive mood for the storytelling is as much a part of the process as the listening itself.
And in the first episode of the podcast, I noticed you mentioned a good story has a beginning, middle, and an end.
Right.
It's hard to do that in 30 pages.
Oh, man. That's why short stories, it's such a genre that is difficult to master. However, when it's done, and it's been done by some of the most talented writers in the history of the written word, it is stunningly enjoyable.
Joe in Plainfield, you're on WNYC with LeVar Burton. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you? It's wonderful to be on. Thank you. And hello, LeVar, and hello, Brian.
Hi.
I wanted to say that it's really exciting, the idea of having short stories where students can listen to them, because it means that they can get the tone and also the kind of timbre that goes on with reading. It's really important because they don't hear that enough.
I agree,
and the other thing I want to say is thank you, LeVar, because it's a particular episode as a teacher and a librarian that my students were absolutely mesmerized by, regardless of their age, and I teach from levels kindergarten up to sixth grade. It was the Tar Beach episode, the story by Faith Ringgold.
Of Reading Rainbow, the original television series, right?
Yes, yeah. And they were also loved the history that you gave of the George Washington Bridge.
Right.
They absolutely adored it, regardless of their age. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. Braxton in Astoria, you're on WNYC with LeVar Burton. Hi, Braxton.
Hi, I'm a huge fan. I grew up watching Reading Rainbow in the morning and then watching Star Trek The Next Generation with my mom at night. So I was well informed of your career as a kid. I've been watching through Star Trek The Next Generation again recently, and in the episodes, whenever Geordi takes off his visor, I noticed there are like little blinking lights just stuck on the side of your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, how did they keep the visor on your head? Was it just adhesive? And what can that teach us about possibilities for prosthetics for blind people today?
Wow.
The blinking lights were double stick taped to my head. When I took the visor off, the visor itself stayed on with a combination of mechanics. One, we screwed it into my head, and
screwed it into your head.
If you can imagine that in the temples of the visor there were flanges that pressed into my temples, and those flanges were activated. They were manipulated by screws. One counterclockwise and one clockwise, there was a box that the visor was delivered in by the prop master, Charlie Russo. Inside the box was the visor and these sort of cotter keys. And I would put one in one ear, temple and one in the other and turn them. And those screws inside the temple piece would put pressure on the flanges, and the flanges would put pressure on my temples. And that's how the visor stayed in place. We also put double stick tape on the bridge of the nose.
For people who don't know, the character was blind,
right,
but was able to see through this special visor.
This prosthetic device, yeah.
And I wonder if that had any special meaning for you, or informed the way you looked at the world, playing a character with a disability.
Absolutely.
Or is that too political a way
to
look at it?
No, not at all. Look, in the same way that Nichelle Nichols was important for me to see on the bridge of the original Enterprise, it was an honor and a joy for me to represent for people who deal with physical challenges every day of their lives. So Geordi was the chief engineer of the largest, baddest starship in the Federation fleet. And as such, it was important for me to portray this man with an air of competence. It was, without being able to see my feet as an actor, it was important for me to have Geordi move through the ship with a real sense of confidence and alacrity, which caused me to have to learn how to navigate those sets without actually seeing my feet.
It's beautiful. Mike in Huntington, you're on WNYC with LeVar Burton. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I just wanted to say to Mr. Burton what a huge inspiration he was for me all throughout my life. I'm a child of the 80s, grew up in the 80s and 90s, and it started from my parents plopping me down in front of the television to watch Reading Rainbow, and my mom singing that theme song to us, take a look, it's in a book, and it just meant so much to me. And as a young African-American boy growing up and then continuing to watch his career through Star Trek The Next Generation, it made me feel very comfortable with myself, with my love of reading, with my love of sci-fi and being a nerd and not having to portray myself as any type of particular stereotype, but to just be myself. And when I went on later in life to go to school and to study education, I became an English teacher very, very much in part from the things that I learned from Reading Rainbow and just the things that I learned from watching Mr. Burton throughout his career, just the way he carries himself and the way he articulates himself. It made me realize, be yourself, and you don't have to conform to what anybody expects you to be. And I just really, really appreciate that, and I just wanted to thank him, because I know it's been for a lot of other young boys as well, not just myself.
Wow. Thank you for that. It is It is oftentimes overlooked just how important it is for people to see themselves represented in the popular culture. I grew up in an era before it was so common, in a time when black people called each other on the phone, when there was one of us on TV for the caller and for, you know, my children to have grown up in a world where it is very commonplace to see themselves represented in the popular culture in music and magazines, on television and films. It helps to shift the consciousness of the culture.
And I would add, as a white person, with respect to Reading Rainbow, how important I think it was for white kids to grow up seeing somebody like you as the, let's say, authoritative and avuncular figure reading books on television.
Right. Yeah.
Vanessa in Long Beach. That's Long Island, not California. Hi, Vanessa.
Yes, actually, I had a very similar comment. I'm also an English teacher. Growing up, we were only allowed to watch Channel 13. So Reading Rainbow and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood were my influences. We actually were thrilled when we were able to buy the books that you read on TV. And one of my favorites is Mufaro's Beautiful Daughter.
I love that book.
And it really inspired me. I'm a writer, I'm an English teacher, and I teach public speaking. And I'm so excited to be able to use this podcast because kids don't know how to tell a story anymore.
Vanessa, thank you very much. Well, are you concerned about reading in the digital era, or do you think that's overblown?
No, I believe that we will still continue to read going forward, that digital devices will not destroy that. The argument when we started Reading Rainbow in the 80s, the first episode was in 1983, the argument then in education circles was, is television an appropriate tool for educating our kids?
Right.
Is it going to signal the death knell of you know, rot the minds of America's children? And that didn't quite happen. So I believe that we will continue to read going forward. We will print fewer books, I believe. It's inevitable. It's an unsustainable practice to continue to make books out of trees.
And things may happen in 140 characters and lengths like that.
Right.
But people are reading and writing constantly online.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of calls from teachers now, a few.
Right.
And I'll just mention that one of the things you've done is school applications like Skybrary, which includes video field trips and lesson plans for teachers.
Right. That was as a result of the Kickstarter that we did in 2014 to raise money to further our imprint in the translation of the television series Reading Rainbow into a digital platform for kids to experience books and videos like they did on the original television series.
So what's coming up on the podcast? Tell people again.
The episode that dropped earlier this week is a Neil Gaiman story. Coming up, I have one of my favorite authors, Octavia Butler. I have a story by her. I think we're going to end the series with perhaps a story by Elmore Leonard. I bounce around in genres. The commonality are they're all of the selections are short stories. They're all stories that I love and want to read aloud. And they're all stories that I hope that the audience sparks to as well.
What are you reading yourself these days?
I'm always reading some science fiction. There's once a year an edition called The Best in Science Fiction Short Fiction, edited by Gardner Dozois. I'm reading a book by a woman named Nadine who was a survivor of the Rwandan genocide. I've got a library on my iPad, and that is a miracle to me, Brian.
And what else are you doing, if anything, in the media? Do you have any TV roles, movie roles, anything coming up?
I'm in the rotation on a CBS television show as a director called NCIS New Orleans, and I head to New Orleans in September to direct. I'll direct, I think, three of those episodes.
It's one of the CIS.
It's one of the CIS programs. It's the one that stars Scott Bakula, who was the captain of the Enterprise in the show Enterprise, one of the Star Trek series.
And that's fun. That's different. And you directed some of the Star Trek episodes.
That's where I started my directing career. Yeah, I directed on Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and Enterprise, as well as other shows like Charmed and whatnot.
Well, we will have to leave it there. LeVar Burton, his new podcast series is called LeVar Burton Reads. What a pleasure. Thank you so much for making this one of your stops.
Reverend, I'm a big fan.
Thank you, Doctor.